This is the Oil and Gas Startups Podcast, where we showcase emerging technology and the stories of industry founders, investors, and leaders with your hosts, Jake Corley and Colin McClelland.
Today, we got my boy Kyle from Iconic Air on the show. You were on the podcast before, right?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Yes, sir.
I didn't go back and look, but it's like, I think that we recorded a podcast. Maybe it was like a year and a half ago
so,
but yeah. I forget who's been on the podcast. I mean, it's crazy, dude. We're almost 6 years into this, doing a podcast a week. It's fucking...
You guys are busy, man. You guys are busy.
Time flies, but what are you doing in town?
I'm in meeting with operators right now.
Awesome.
It's a pretty crazy time right now for people trying to get their carbon accounting systems, you know, up and running.
Yeah, so doing some biz dev. Where do you live out again? Where are you based out of?
I'm personally based out of Austin, Texas.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I was telling Jake, I don't think Jake was on the last podcast with us. I was like, these dudes were kids in college when I first talked to you guys back in, was it 2020?
It was quite a few years ago.
Yeah, 2020. And so it's been really cool to see, you know, if you listen to this now, you'll have to go back and listen to that episode that we did a while back. But, you know, for the people that didn't hear that episode, tell us real quick, what is Iconic Air?
Yeah, for sure. So first off, thanks for having me on here.
Yeah.
So today in the world, carbon data for oil and gas companies specifically looks a lot like financial data. You need to be able to audit it. You need to have it coming in month to month rather than once a year. And it needs to be highly accurate. Mm-hmm. And therefore, Iconic Air is pretty much the TurboTax for carbon accounting, right?
Yeah.
There's all these different carbon accounting frameworks that have come out, and it's all hit in a relatively short amount of time. A lot of new regulations, a lot of new financial institutions tying cost of capital to emissions.
Yeah.
And therefore, we are a single platform that pulls in everyone's carbon data from operations and makes it easy for them.
Yeah, let's dive into this a little bit and talk about just what's happening. I saw that the other day, the SEC passed that, you know, carbon accounting is now a metric that has to be tracked. And you touched on the basis that, you know, there's multiple frameworks. Let's talk about those frameworks a little bit and what they are. And I'm asking you from like a point of like genuine curiosity. I'm not familiar with all of them, but you know, the one like bitch and complaint I've heard from like operators is like, what is the standard? Or, you know, there's goalposts that are moving, and, you know, people, are a little bit, suspect of like incentives of, okay, who's setting the standards. So talk about those different frameworks and what you're seeing out in the market, you know, what frameworks people are using, what's, you know, what's most popular, and, how those kind of feed into Iconic Air.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, who does Iconic Air work with to start? And I think that would be a good way to tee it up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we work with everyone from 30 employee private equity owned small oil and gas producers, all the way up to, I'd say, mid-sized to maybe large publics, right? Today, we work with 4 or 5 different public entities who have to do these SEC disclosures that you're talking about.
Yeah.
But then we work with 30-person private equity-owned who don't even have somebody internally who has a title of environmental or sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, dude, what do we do?
Yeah.
Like, we just got so much more regulatory scrutiny put on us. And how on earth do we keep up, right? And so we have packages that service them, and essentially is truly the TurboTax value prop of, cool, hey, you push all your data in or we'll automate it. And then it will spit out your annual subpart W EPA report, which is like the report for submitting your emissions once a year.
Okay.
And then for the public companies, what do we do exactly? I think we can work with their sustainability teams to reduce their waste emissions charge and methane fees. There was a lot of stuff that was submitted through the IRA bill.
Yeah.
Right. So I just kind of wanted to get at that out there, but let's take a step back and talk about these frameworks.
Yeah.
So today, yes, the SEC passed this regulation that pretty much says, hey, you have to disclose emissions data, and you're going to be held accountable to that emissions data the same way that you're held accountable to financial data, because they're considering it now a signal to what the value of your company is, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you have dirty assets, this could mean that your price per share should be somewhat lower, right? Because you can't just simply go out there, and those assets are not equivalent in SEC's eyes of maybe clean assets, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's these new rules being passed, one's the SEC one, but I think a lot of people don't really realize that that's maybe still a few years out from being truly enacted, and there's still some speculation around it. So like, what are operators truly feeling the pain on today in 2024 and in Jan 1, 2025? It's a lot of the new regulation that's been passed in the IRA bill. That's more around the EPA's protocols and regulations and framework for their, they call it subpart W, Quad OA, Quad OB. And there has been a lot more scrutiny that's been placed on those rules. Mm-hmm. So operators essentially need to be able to answer questions in a more timely manner if leaks are discovered, or else they may suffer a, they call it a waste emissions charge. It's essentially a timer from the moment a leak is discovered by an outside entity that now is going to start charging you, right, by almost like the hour or day based on how long that's been, you know, active for.
Yeah. And, you know, this is, we just did a video on this the other day. You know, John Arnold tweeted out that released or launched a supposedly the most powerful methane satellite. And, you know, there's all these methane satellites now. And so the tracking, there's a lot of tracking technology that's tracking methane leaks. And I think some people are pretty surprised to see that, oh, hell, there's a lot of methane leaks in international entities. It's not all, you know, the United States. So I think people are kind of getting a little bit surprised by that. But I think it's pretty interesting, like, seeing the SEC treat this equivalent to financial data. You know, I think that there's a lot that still has to be figured out. Like, I think scope 3 emissions are a fucking scam through and through. Scope 1, scope 2, I understand. But, you know, it's like, why is Amazon not being penalized for using gasoline in a delivery truck to deliver one toothbrush to a house, you know? And then those same frameworks are being used to scrutinize oil and gas. And so I think that there's a lot that needs to be figured out. But when it comes to like the methane, I've been really surprised. You know, I was talking to, I won't say the company's name, but large private EMP out in West Texas, ran by old school wildcatter. That information, you can guess who I'm talking about. But not the type of company that I would expect to take methane emissions seriously. But when I talked to their engineering team, it's like, no, we're using different technologies to track it, to pinpoint it. And then as soon as it's tracked and pinpointed, we've got an entire workflow that gets a technician out there to fix it. And so it was pretty eye-opening to see like this old school private operator who doesn't operate in the public markets taking it seriously and having entire workflows and engineering teams dedicated to it. So the shift that I've seen in upstream, it's definitely real. And people are putting a lot of time and effort into it, which is a good thing. I mean, this is what I find, sorry to go on a rant here, but the methane emissions issue's always been interesting to me because the incentives are so aligned for everyone. I mean, for oil and gas companies, it's literally your product that's bleeding off, right? So it's like you want to capture that product and be able to sell it. So you have some incentive to keep it contained.
I think, yeah, I mean, you make some really good points. I think one thing that's interesting is I think the world's coming back to reality on the whole energy thing and where does it come from and what is actually clean energy, right?
Yeah.
I think people are having a little bit of a reality check right now.
I think
it's good. I think it's like, we went a lot very far in one direction and now we're coming back in the other direction. It's a balancing act, right?
Yeah.
But something I think would be, you know, interesting to chat about that I don't think people are aware of is this isn't just a regulatory driver right now. Like, people aren't just out here collecting carbon data just because regulations are becoming more scrutinous. I'm talking with a lot of, let's just use, I guess, an example. I'm talking to a large midstream operator, right? And there's a lot of them, but I'm talking to a large midstream operator and they say, hey, Kyle, we need to be able to start capturing our data at a very granular level from the meter and to understand the exact carbon footprint of that molecule of gas from when we pick it up to when it gets delivered. And we need to know it month to month. And we're going to start putting it in the commercial terms of all of our agreements with LNG exports and utility companies.
Mm.
Why? It's not regulation. It's because LNG export companies and utility companies, who are their customers? Well, it's heavy industrials. It's people that are selling huge amounts of power to, maybe concrete or steel or everybody actually. But the point is like, they're being demanded to do that. Why are they being demanded to do that? It's because these, you know, steel companies or just any of these heavy industrial companies that are making products, Europe is wanting a less carbon intensive form of energy because they have all these global goals around, you know, you could be for it or against it, but it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. The market is the market is the market, right? And that's been the Texas philosophy for a long time.
Yeah.
And so they're demanding it. And now the private market is reacting.
Yeah.
And you could totally remove all regulations from this And this is a full private market thing. Now, some there might be some other regulatory tailwinds to it, right, of enterprise risk reduction, et cetera. But the point is like there's two major drivers. One's regulations and waste emissions charges, and everyone's getting fired up about that, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But then there's this complete total private market driver that I don't think people pay enough attention to.
Yeah, you know, that's a couple of years ago when the idea of certified natural gas came out. And you know, I remember we did this event called New Wave, which was a private event, Chatham House Rules. Everyone said it was an Illuminati event because right after we did it, oil prices started shooting up. So they're like, what kind of like spiritual rituals are y'all doing there? But anyways, one of the conversations, you know, we had the Toby Rices of the world there, and we're talking about certified natural gas. And it was interesting to hear from operators from across the spectrum. You know, obviously EQT is massive, but you had smaller operators, and you know, some the question was is like, oh, is there really a premium for certified natural gas in the market? And that was like what the talk was, is in the private markets. So it was like, hey, are buyers like Europe willing to pay higher prices for those molecules if it's certified natural gas? And so people are trying to wrap their heads around like, oh, maybe there is going to be different levels and grades of quality of molecules based on emissions data. And so I don't know where that conversation has gone, like from a market perspective, if there are price differentials between, you know, certified versus non-certified. But regardless, like you were starting to see the private markets at play of like, hey, this is what end users demand. And maybe they're willing to pay a premium for it. Maybe they're not. You know, maybe they just say, hey, if you're not certified, we don't buy it at all. But yeah, it was private markets at work for that.
That's exactly right. And I think, you know, people might, I don't know where the market stands today in terms of the thought process around this. It might still be a little bit early days, right? But I think the circumstance that I just described to you, that is like that bottoms up data that I'm getting from talking to people, is like an early signal that this market is either coming or it becomes the new norm. Those are what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
But what I'm being asked from like a great thing is I talked with a large private equity company today, and I love talking with private equity because they are looking for solutions for their operators to reduce risk. Yeah. But these guys aren't just sloshing around money and spending it frivolously, right? Like this directly impacts their profitability.
Yeah.
So when I start talking with them and they start to understand the value prop and they're like, yes, our operators need stuff like this, I know like markets are ready to turn and that this is a serious thing, right?
Yeah.
And so when I talk with them, they said what you said. They said, wow, what are all the frameworks? You have like MIQ is a potential framework. You have OGMP 2.0 is a potential framework.
Yeah.
You have other frameworks that banks accept and ones that the EPA accept with different protocols and different calculations and different buckets for millions and millions and millions of data points for carbon data.
Yeah.
Right. And our whole value prop is we're going to pull all the data if you're using from all of your operational activity, right? So if you have 2,000 engines out in West Texas, we have them in our Iconic Air database, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's what drives a lot of this. So we pull all the operational data. And then if you're using a Bridger Photonics or you're using a GHG sat or using something else to kind of do top-down reconciliation, we pull that in. And then what we do is we just make it so that the data is bucketed and the calculations are ran correctly, right? We have baked in 2,000 pages of EPA protocols into our platform. And we just make it so, hey, we pull all your data in. And now you just look at our menu and choose what you want. You want MIQ, you want GMP 2.0, you want your subpart W report and your leak data management report. Like you can just choose those as buckets in our platform and export the data.
Yeah.
Right? And we handle all of the bucketing.
How does this work for you guys? You know, you said that you've got a spectrum of clients from, you know, small 30-person shops up to larger companies. All of their data is probably structured differently. And so how are y'all dealing with that on your end? You know, it's easy to say just on the podcast, like, oh yeah, just give us all your data. And then you select the buckets if it's MIQ framework. What do y'all require in terms of how that data is structured or what format you need it in?
Yeah, I mean, look, the reality is the vast majority of the industry today is still in Excel spreadsheets,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
This is the reality. Yeah. And I think, you know, people talk about using various software platforms like WellView or ProMax or, you know, there's tons of platforms that we could talk about that we could connect into.
Yeah.
But even when we talk with operators and they're like, hey, we want you to connect into these systems, and then we kick off an implementation, they end up using Excel spreadsheets for the first quarter or two anyway because they want to move fast and make sure it works correctly and all these things. And I would say like, the number one thing that we're most proud of as an organization is that we built a product-first company, which means we aren't tech-enabled consulting. We aren't vaporware. Yeah. We built a bottoms up robust carbon accounting engine, and you can get in there and pull out all the Excel spreadsheets that you need for templates and push the data in a annual, semi-annual, monthly, daily even basis. And you can work all the data in yourself, right? Month one, we have you in the platform. If you want all of your historical data and all your facilities and all your engine data, we use Excel spreadsheets to move quickly and get them in there.
Yeah.
And I don't think people realize that. Like, we can have you in there in month one, and we'll take a little bit more time to get everything actually stood up. Yes. Like, that's how the real world works. It takes good 4, 5, 6 months to actually get you running.
Yeah.
And it's a heavy Excel spreadsheet driven, and we'll eventually move you into APIs and stuff that makes it a little bit easier in a more automated process.
Yeah, for sure.
But the reality is, like you said, it's a lot of Excel early days.
Yeah. Well, I love one, how you positioned that, because, you know, I was just talking about a partnership with another tech company, and I was like, hey, it's like, first off, send me over an Excel spreadsheet, and this is low hanging fruit. This allows us to get, you know, get working in 2 to 3 weeks. And then over time, once we identify what we want to do, then we can, you know, start working off APIs, building the automation, and start hard coding it. But it's always a spectrum of, hey, what's the lowest hanging fruit just to get running and get up and going. So appreciate that you guys have that mindset in the onboarding process.
I'm interested in hearing what you hear from your side of the world, right? In terms of talking with a lot of tech companies, and two, you have a tech company of your own.
Yeah.
But dude, I have so much empathy for the oil and gas operator today. When I'm talking with them about buying our solution or potentially other solutions that are on the market, I have so much empathy, because I know that they're being berated left and right. They're being promised X, Y, and Z. They're being told this can be implemented in sub 30 days. They're being told it's an easy process. And these are all lies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, dude, even with our Collide Pro product, this is not enterprise software like you guys are selling or anything else. And even that onboarding process, I mean, it takes a lot of time and meetings. You got different stakeholders within companies. And so, you know, I think that I have empathy for enterprise software startups in this space, because you put yourself in the shoes of operators. I mean, one, you're being asked to upend systems that you have, plug in new things. There's so many different considerations. Like, hey, you know, like, one thing I hear all the time is like concerns around, you know, credit capacity for the startups. Like, hey, if we do all this work to implement it, are they going to be around in the next year or two? And I mean, this is just like reality, right? And it's a very good question too. You know, production engineers specifically are just berated and bombarded by technology providers. And there's a lot of noise in the space, and it's hard to find signal. Not to plug Collide Pro in here, but that's, I mean, when we're finding our product market fit with production engineers, because like, oh shit, this actually allows us a tool for discoverability to see what's out there. And so, yeah, like, it's easy to have empathy for these operators, because they're already busy enough with their day-to-day job, putting out the fires that come along with an oil and gas operation. And then you're looking at new technologies. There's, you know, vaporware out there, smoke and mirrors, people making promises, and it's just a lot. And you know, that's just kind of one of the disconnects on both sides of the market is you got startups that have the typical startup challenges, and then you got these operators that have their challenges trying to adopt and deploy new technology. And, you know, that's what some EMPs are just like. Like, hey, we want to see it being used at one or two other companies to know it's real. And so that's what the value is in doing this stuff, is, you know, allowing a resource for companies to come hear about you guys and all the other startups to make a decision.
Yeah, I really resonate with what you just said. And I think that, you know, the two things that I talk to operators about today, right? Because you can, you know, a lot of pitches sound great. Walk into the room. There's 12 people sitting around the table, kind of sitting like this. You know, you're shaking and jiving, you're hitting the slides, you have some executives, people are getting excited, right? And that is like the easiest part of our job.
Yeah.
It's like walking in and selling somebody on a slide deck and showing a matrix of things that they want fulfilled, and you have them all checkmarked. What do you know? They're all checkmarked. Who would have thought?
Every single one.
Who would have thought, right? And so there's two things that we tell operators to do to cut through the noise. We say, ask for a sandbox environment with your data today.
Mm-hmm.
Say, hey, if you're a real technology company and you just checkmarked 15 different boxes.
Yeah.
I can do state reports. I can do federal reports. I can do global framework reports. I can tell you this. I can tell you that. Ask for a sandbox with your data and send it over and wait for it. And then make sure the
That's a real test, man.
Make sure the functions work. That's one. And the second thing I say is call their customers. If they're proud, they should put their customers on a silver platter. And mm-hmm. don't let them give some BS excuse of all trying to save their time. Look, I get it. But they're also your peers. Like they like to talk to each other. They talk to each other all the time,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And so these are the two things that I do to try to smoke a room out.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, there's a lot of vaporware in the room right now. Let's like just put that on the table.
You know, that's one, like whenever I pitch, I never pitch off of a deck. Like I run through our technology and show it. And like last week, I was talking to a technical society about a partnership getting their data. And I said, hey, I'll go scrape all your abstracts track now and I'll have it in the model by next week. And they're like, hell yeah. It's like, I'm not going to just keep like, I'll show it working. You know, it's not smoke and mirrors. It's not some pitch deck. It's not some, you know, fucking pie in the sky idea. So yeah, that's how, hey, you want to like really be about it and get business. That's how you go about doing
it. Yeah, man. It's hard though. Cause we go into some stuff with a bunch of vendors. Right. And so we are just like, man, how do we break through and show them that we're the real deal and we have really happy people.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so that's, you know, that's where our heads typically get during the process.
So let's talk about the company and y'all's operations for a minute, because like I said earlier, you know, we connected way back in the day. You guys went on to raise some venture capital. I think y'all raised $5 million. Is that correct?
That's spot on.
Cool. $5 million. Raise it from some VCs. Tell me that story, how y'all connected with those VCs and raised that round.
Yeah, I mean, first off, let's start here. You're talking with the two co-founders of both West Virginia boys, right?
That's what I wanted to add in there. Like, that's what I was asking, because I'm like, y'all are in West Virginia. You know, it's not like this is some Silicon Valley startup. You know, this is heart of coal country. So
dude, we are the last people who should be in the position that we're in today. Yeah. So James Carnes and myself, we met each other in college. That's my co-founder. We met each other in college at West Virginia University.
Yeah.
We were both raised from two blue collar families in the middle of West Virginia. Both went to school at West Virginia University because that was the coolest thing to do. That was like the highest thing that you shot for, going to school at West Virginia University. Little did I know, a lot of the world was like, where? Who? Yeah.
It's cool to you though. That's all that matters.
It was cool, man. Dude, I thought that was it. So we went to school at West Virginia University. We met there and we entered, this whole thing got started by entering the West Virginia Business Plan Competition. And we thought that was the apex at the time, right? And we had all sorts of ideas and what we were working on, but it eventually turned into a leak data management product for oil and gas companies, where we wanted to take IoT data, drone data, and satellite data and synthesize it together for better operational decision-making. Nothing to do with carbon, just better operational decision-making. And that eventually obviously turned into what we're working on now, right?
Yeah.
But that's where we got our start. West Virginia Business Plan Competition. Some people pointed us. We got very lucky. We found some good mentors and they pointed us in the right direction of like online YouTube videos talking about high growth startups and like pointing us to like TechCrunch and all of this kind of like West Coasty mentality of like how to run a company, right?
Yeah.
We learned so much, man. We learned so much. We were so hungry, so much more hungry than most people who, you know, come from maybe like a elevated family or something like that.
Yeah.
So we just had this like deep hunger to like make something cool and like get someone to buy it.
Yeah.
And so we were like scraping along the bottom, like selling this product to oil and gas companies. And obviously we met these tailwinds of like this huge movement around carbon and regulation, all this stuff, right?
Yeah.
We eventually took that out to the West Coast. We got $5 million during that very frothy period.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so maybe without that frothy period, who knows how we had received that, right? Two guys from West Virginia. Who knows how they would have, you know, viewed that story.
I'd be willing to bet that you guys still would have made it happen. I mean, there's a spectrum to entrepreneurs and founders and, you know, lots of bad founders get funded during frothy times, but got a belief that good founders always find a way to make it happen and get funding. So
we love the period that we're in right now where the markets went through chaos. And I actually think if markets would have stayed extremely frothy, we might have lost in that environment.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because we are not the super polished up individuals that have ran companies before and hired hundreds of people at a time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think we could have lost in that environment.
Yeah.
Right? Like, why wouldn't you take a 50-year-old with gray hair who's already done that 4, 5, 6 times, has been through a few markets, and because this is becoming a big opportunity right now in the world, right?
Yeah.
And so it's actually benefited us to be able to be a true in the trenches, heads down, capital efficient company of 13 people now after 2 years, raised venture capital.
Love
and
it.
We're still out here surviving, landing 15 plus oil and gas operators today.
Yeah.
Like we are the real deal right now, where I think before you could have raised $100 million and covered it up for, you know, another 3 or 4 years that you really don't have great product and you're not.
It happens to a lot of companies. Go raise a shit ton of money, but you don't have product market fit. And, you know, same thing over here. You know, we've raised $4.5 million and we have 13 people. And, you know, I have lots of friends that have raised a ton of money, and you go deploy that capital by increasing headcount and hiring people. And then it's like, oh, we don't have product market fit 2 years later, and you got to cut a lot of people. And, you know, I think that a couple things on a macro level that have happened that are good is, one, VC markets, tech markets correcting and getting, you know, a little bit, shit was getting stupid for a couple of years there. And
that's putting it lightly.
Yeah. And then, the energy IQ pendulum coming back around, you know, when you and I first talked, I mean, we were at like peak ESG, anti-oil and gas of 2020 and 2021. The world is getting a lot smarter on what it actually means to have secure and reliable energy. And it's like, oh, actually oil and gas is going to play a part in that for the foreseeable future. So we need solutions to make it more sustainable. And so I think those are both, for Iconic Aaron, for us as well, those are both good macro trends that are happening. But yeah, it's nice to be in an environment like one where good companies are rewarded, capital efficiency is rewarded. You know, it's like, I hate when you have to compete with overfunded companies that don't have product market fit, but they become a drain. They get all the best talent because they had the money, right? And so it makes this like really lopsided type of market that's hard to operate in.
Something that was interesting to me about this easy to raise money time period, like maybe call it just oversaturated with companies, right?
Yeah.
I think that they have a hard time. I think like that introduces a new problem set to the equation. Like, I think it's easy for them to raise a lot of money, but I think it's like, just from my anecdotal looking at the markets and looking at competition and seeing like what we see.
Yeah.
I think it's really hard to like be more fundamentals oriented and explain what you're doing in a simple way and being extremely crystal clear about it.
Yeah.
Like, I've talked with other folks who are like, hey, look, this company is kind of similar to you, I think, and they raised, you know, $80 million or something like this, but I don't know what they do. Like, I watched their whole pitch twice and I don't know what they do, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, isn't this like 101? Yeah. Isn't this like first slide, one sentence, as simple as possible?
You know something that is so funny? So when we first started taking Collide Pro to the market, one of our EMPs that had access to it, very large EMP, going to say this without doxing any companies here, they're like, hey, like, we love this because we were looking at integrating XYZ tech company, and we didn't actually understand what XYZ tech company did. It wasn't clear what their value prop was or how we integrated that into our company. Came over to Collide Pro, we searched for XYZ company, and one of their pitches from your Fuse event came up. We watched it, and all of a sudden we had so much clarity into what they actually did. And it kind of like blew my mind, because I'm like, this is literally your job as like a startup founder, to just be able to articulate like exactly what the fuck you do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's just like, simplify the storytelling of like, hey, this is where we actually fit in the world. And some companies struggle with that.
Dude, it sounds like you guys are getting great traction though with Collide Pro now. It feels like
it's just fucking, it's a cool tool. Like, it, and it's valuable. Like, people are finding value in it. And so, you know what's funny? Just like a little story here, because you'll appreciate this from the 2020 days. So in 2020, we launched this product called the Bullpen, and it's a page on our website. And like, if you would have been on our podcast back then, you would have been on it. But we got 20 oil and gas startups to come on, and they each had their own profile page where they had their demo and shit like that. And anyways, we launch it. This thing's a hit. Like, this, I remember this PE fund reached out to me like, this is the most innovative thing we've seen in energy. And I'm like, dude, it's a page on our website, chill. It's literally on WordPress. Like, it's not. And anyways, everyone was asking for that to come back. And I just found out that this this company that was on there got acquired by Pack Energy like 2 years ago. Apparently the founders did really well, made a ton of money, but Pack found them from the bullpen. That's how they discovered them. And so, you know, we've always had this like platform for like technology discovery. And it's like, you know, the reason Clyde Pro is taking off of production engineers is because like there's so much shit out there. Just need to be able to like sift through and find the signal. And so it's really just like Clyde Pro has been an evolution of our podcast and our energy tech nights, and just doing it in a way that's enabled with AI to find stuff quickly. So
we're in a noisy world, man. There's some more data than ever before, right? And for you guys to be able to build a product, to me, that cuts through the noise and just gets to the answer is incredible.
Well, that's what's you know, interesting is you look at the amount of content and data that's out there, and you see this with like ChatGPT. It's like the way that data and content is structured around the internet and within companies, it's changing rapidly. And so you know, this plays both in the theme of Iconic Air and what we're doing with Clyde Pro, because it's like people want answers, right? And so for y'all, it's like, hey, all I want is this EPA report at the end of the year. I'm a small 30 person team. I don't want to have to hire environmental teams and have to do all this burdensome, you know, data analysis. I want to upload my shit and I want to get a report. I want to get an answer at the end. That's what the world wants and it's moving towards. So I think that you can see this theme across different sectors and different products and companies. And it'll just be interesting to see where that continues to go over the next decade with the rise of AI. But, you know, for you guys, it's been fun to watch y'all from afar. You know, I've enjoyed seeing y'all be successful. What are the challenges that y'all are facing right now? Is it mainly that noise from competitors? Is it EMPs trying to wrap their heads around, you know, so much being thrown at them? You know, what the hell are they actually trying to do? What do you see as the biggest challenge for you guys as a company?
Yeah, I mean, I think 6 months ago, I may have said to you that what you just said around EMPs wrapping their head around it, or just the industry as a whole, right? Upstream, midstream, wrapping their head around it and seeing the value prop as, you know, value add today.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case today. I think the case today is they know exactly what we do and they know they need it. And now it's just a timeline game of, do I buy this quarter? Do I buy next quarter? Right.
Yeah.
Last 2 years, I've talked to 150 operators doing 150 different demos.
Yeah.
Asking them questions, better understanding strategically of their businesses. And this is from the 30-person companies to public companies. So I feel like I have a very, very good sense of like where their heads are at.
Yeah.
And I think I've talked with 35 operators since Jan 1 this year. And it is in a totally different space.
Yeah.
They're like, no, we need this. We know. Give us the proposal. Yeah. give me an idea of what this is.
So what you're saying is, implementation? This is a fun time for Iconic Air compared to the last couple of years.
This makes the last 2 years look like hell, dude.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's a good time, man. We're just trying to meet the need right now, right? Yeah. It's like there's so much regulation. There's so much commercial markets. We're being asked for new features and new value props every single day, much like yourself.
Yeah.
And so we're just trying to rise to that need and meet it where it's at.
So if anyone's listening to this show and they're at an upstream or midstream company, what's your ask to them? Are you just trying to, you know, get as much feedback and meetings as you can with operators? Where can they find you? Give us the ask and the information where they can contact you.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say the time is now for getting prepared, right? Like we just had essentially the methane waste emissions charge go into effect for starting to charge people for excess methane intensity beginning Jan 1 this year. The rest of the rule actually comes in Gen 1 next year, right? So the time is now.
Yeah.
And I understand that people don't want to just jump on demos all the time and talk to people. So I don't do the same for other technologies that we need.
Yeah.
So I'll just say, go check us out on LinkedIn, right? On LinkedIn, cool. You can go check it out and we put out a lot of information.
And after this podcast, Iconic Air is going to be, y'all are going to have a profile page on Clyde Pro. So you can go check them out on Clyde Pro.
Let's do it, man.
Well, thanks, dude, for coming on. This has been great. If y'all enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend, share it on LinkedIn, share it on Twitter, share it on email. I don't give a shit where you share it. Just share it. Kyle, appreciate you being on, man.
Thanks, man.